Welcome to Form of Passion, episode 92. Thank you once again, everyone, for joining us. If this is your first time, my name is Ace Stallings. This is an interview podcast about people involved in hardcore, punk, and metal, and how it has shaped their lives and how they continue to shape it for the rest of us. Want to send a shout out to all the new Patreon subscribers that have joined since the last mainline episode. If you aren't familiar, we have a Patreon feed that helps fund this podcast. That's at www.patreon.com/formofpassion. If you sign up there for $2 a month, you're going to get an additional episode on the last Friday of each month and a shout out on these mainline episodes. We got two for this week, Mr. William Horowitz. Thank you very much, William. And we have, Matthew Ha. Thank you very much, Matthew. If you support us over there, you're going to get some more analytical type episodes. We discuss records, shows, ideas. It's a little bit more of a break from the interview format. Occasionally, we'll have some kind of interview-based episodes as well. All things hardcore, punk, and metal, and subculture. So if that sounds enticing to you and you like this podcast and want to help us out, go over there and do so. Today's guest is an individual that is part of a scene that really has been around for a long period of time, but I feel like in the past, let's say, I don't know, seven, five years, really blossomed into a pivotal part of hardcore as a whole. His band is an outstanding, unit. And I know he's been playing music for a long time now, but, this is somebody that I, consider a friend and somebody that I'm always excited to see. And I'm looking forward to kind of learning how a pivotal member of the current Hudson Valley scene, kind of came up to that point. Today's guest is Mr. Terry Orlando. Sir, how are you?
Yo, what's up? It's crazy to hear some of those things, but yeah, I think that's kind of true.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. It's like, previous to, I always knew about All Out War and I knew about Colony and had seen Colony and stuff of that nature. But for me, somebody from the Mid-Atlantic and the South, away from those two bands for a long time, I didn't really know what was coming out of that area that wasn't upstate. I would think of Troy and stuff like
that. Yeah.
Whereas now between people think
Syracuse, Albany.
Yeah. Syracuse, Albany, Troy,
Buffalo.
Whereas now it's between Mindforce, Age of Apocalypse, Soulblind, and a bunch of others. Hudson Valley is a big part of the conversation as a whole now.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's kind of interesting because those three bands are definitely optically the ones representing the Hudson Valley in the biggest way, probably across, around the world or whatever, what people can see of what's going on here. But it's cool because it's really, all three of those bands sound really different. And that's kind of the thing about the Hudson Valley is there's kind of a Hudson Valley sound, but there's more of just the thing about Hudson Valley bands is we just tend to be kind of weird.
Yes.
And different. And there's not really there's not really a generic Hudson Valley band. You know what I mean?
No, not at all. I mean, it's you can tell, you can kind of you can hear some similarities in some of the lead work between AOA and Mindforce and
Yeah.
Mike's.
And that does come from the All Out War.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Is that the area that you're originally from?
Yeah, I've lived here my whole life. I was born in Rhinebeck, New York.
Okay. I
grew up in Woodstock and Bearsville, which is basically Woodstock, but it's just a little deeper into the woods. You pass the town and start climbing the mountain towards Phoenicia. Okay. And Hunter Mountain. I don't know if people ski and snowboard and shit, they might be familiar with that area of New York. But yeah, I've been here my whole life. I'm a local yokel.
uh, growing up there, you know, you mentioned like Woodstock and stuff and everything, and you know, people are for sure familiar with that outside of the area. Like what was kind of, you talk about the skiing and everything, like what was kind of the lay of the land? Like were you like living like kind of like for a layman, like kind of like mountain town life, or like what was growing up in that area like?
You know, I think it's kind of different for a lot of people. For me, so my parents owned a restaurant growing up. It opened the year I was born. It was in Woodstock, and I grew up like mostly in Woodstock. And Woodstock's kind of like, it's a real tourist town, and there's a lot of money, but then there's like a real kind of like fucked up, like seedy underbelly. 'Cause it's like the whole image of the town was based off of the festival, which, you know, into the 90s just became like glorification of drugs and you know, just getting fucked up all the time and shit like that. So right, a lot of the adults were getting fucked up all the time and not really paying a lot of attention to the kids. So the kids were kind of running wild. And I think a lot of my youth, you know, I just kind of ran wild a lot of the time.
Were you like getting in trouble at all, or like with like the law, or was it just kind of like I'm doing my own thing and, you know, just like my parents just kind of aren't paying attention?
Well, my parents were a little better than a lot of the other kids in town. With the restaurant, they were very busy, and my mom put herself through law school when I was a kid, so like she was a little preoccupied with that.
Definitely.
But they were like pretty present, and they definitely like cared a lot more than some of the kids I grew up. You know, I ended up not hanging out in Woodstock very much as I got older, and hanging out in Kingston instead, which is where I live now, which is just like a 15-minute drive from Woodstock. Sure. But just because the police were really active and bored in Woodstock. So like by the time I was like 10, 11 years old, I was already like seasoned and getting like hassled by the police.
Sure. And like the reason I asked that, because it was like small kind of town vibe. It's like, you know, cops will look for something to do because there's not enough for them to
definitely
do, you know.
Definitely.
And so that's kind of why I asked that.
Yeah. And you know, and all we wanted to do was fucking skateboard for the most part. And you know, a lot of these kids, they want to skate and like get fucked up and, you know, whatever. And like basically, you remember the skateboarding is not a crime sticker?
Oh yeah,
you remember that shit? Mm-hmm. Like, that was some real shit like around here. Like we were getting fucking literally arrested for skateboarding. And it's funny too, because when I was really young, I looked a lot older. I started having facial hair when I was like 10, so oh, these shit, cops okay. never believed me when I told them how old I was and shit. Crazy.
Damn. Okay, so you had facial hair at 10. That is fucking something. All right.
Yeah.
So I mean, how would you found skateboarding, you know, kind of being in a place of this size?
Well, so all right, let me back it up a little bit, because you know, I think skateboarding just kind of came with like the punk rock thing. And punk rock was just like a thing that like my dad was into punk rock. My older sister, who's like 6.5 years older than me, she's like super into punk rock. So I was like exposed to all that shit, like really young. And so I think all that imagery and shit was just like cool as fuck to me. And so I gravitated toward kids in school who like looked like skaters.
I see.
And then I like got into skating that way, kind of, you know?
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. What kind of, like you said, you like your parents are into punk, and your sister, like what kind of stuff are they listening to?
Well, not my mom. My mom kind of did. She's not really a music person. She's more just like, she's like a lawyer. She's from Queens, from a big Italian family, just sort of like, you know, grew up in the 70s. So sort of like just that type. But my dad, he like played in punk bands. He's just a music guy. He likes all kinds of music. I grew up listening to all kinds of crazy fucking world music and jazz and all that shit. But he played in like punk, like garage bands in like the 70s.
Gotcha.
And he was
okay.
really into like the Dictators. Like Dictators, like his favorite band. And, you know, he like exposed me like the Clash and Sex Pistols and all that stuff when I was like real, real young. Sure. And same with my sister. And she got real deep into like the, you know, like the punk shit of the time, you know? She was really into like fucking Ausrotten and fucking Subhumans and,
okay,
you know, like that kind of punk.
Yep. And like that the anarcho punk of the 90s and whatnot. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And yeah, as a kid, did you like were you into kind of into one style more than the other, or was it kind of all the same to you?
Well, you know, it's funny. It was so all the same to me that like, I didn't even know what was punk and what wasn't. Cause like in my mind, like I'm just looking at the people who I know are like punk rockers and like mm-hmm. what they listen to. And I'm just like, oh, everything they listen to must be punk. So I'm like 6 years old listening to like Rolling Stones thinking it's punk. You know what I mean? And then okay. I went on like a CD collecting journey in, you know, in like fucking elementary school, basically. And then by the time I was like in like seventh, eighth grade, I kind of had an understanding of what I liked, what was what, like genres started to like have names to me and shit. It wasn't all just like guitar music anymore, you know? Got it.
When you were a kid, you know, and your father had like played in like, you know, like punk bands and things of that nature, did you start out like playing guitar like when you were younger, or did that come later?
So there's always music in my house. Like I always fucked around with it. Like there's always instruments and shit around. My dad bought my brother a drum kit when he was pretty young. But my brother wasn't really into music. He was like a sports dude. And I ended up like fucking around on the drums a bunch. Drums were kind of my first instrument in that way, because we like always had a drum set around the house. But I started playing bass when I was 8.
Okay. So my sister taught me.
No, I started all this shit real young. It was like, it was weird. When I was really young, I just like felt like I had to fucking be a part of this thing, you know?
I got you. Yeah, you know, and it's like, so it's like, yeah, like the average 6 year old isn't really listening to Ausrotten or Subhumans, and like, you know, the average 8 year old probably isn't playing like, you know, drums and bass and stuff like that. So you definitely have like a leg up on people. I mean, being that young and doing that, when did you kind of start having friends that you would also kind of play music with?
So I was like always trying to get people. So like, honestly, as soon as I like, all right, my dad showed me The Clash, and he also showed me how to use his fucking Tascam 4-track tape recorder. Okay. I think I was about 9 years old. It was like the year after I started playing bass. And then I just like anybody I knew who like also just liked music or whatever, I'd be like, yo, let's start a band, like come over and we'll jam or whatever. They come over and like, we wouldn't fucking do anything half the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then that was just like a journey I went on for a long time, just jamming with like as many people as I could all the time. I think I started the first band that I quit when I was like 10 or 11. Me and this kid, Eli, we like started this band and I was going to play drums in it. And then we just like came up with a name basically. And we're like, yo, we should start a band. We like came up with this name. And then he like called this venue in town and like booked us a show. And oh, I was shit. Like, oh, I bail. I was like, checking out. And then that band actually ended up like reincarnating after a little while into this other band called UTD. Who actually played like a real significant role in my like journey into like hardcore.
Okay, interesting. So when did UTD become a thing?
I want to say like 2004, probably 2005, maybe.
So you would have been how old then?
Like 12.
Okay. So only a couple years after, like you kind of had the idea for this band and like, you know, it didn't actually like formulate, did it actually come together, but without you though?
Yeah. Yeah. Without me. So they became this band called the Sewer Goats, and they like had a few songs. The song they like, one of the songs was just like the noodly riff from Teenage Time Killer by Rudimentary Peni. Like, it was kind of that thing where, like, and Dylan, who sings in AOA, he like played guitar in that.
Got it. Okay.
So, like, we've been, you know, we've been friends for a really long time and like doing this shit together. So we're like little babies.
I mean, like, God, you're super young. Like, you know, I feel like a lot of people, this kind of stuff starts happening more so in like high school as opposed to like, you know, like a few years prior.
Well, that's when like hardcore happened for me, I think. Like, I was like 13 probably when I like got into like hardcore, and like the bands I was playing in started having like mosh parts and shit like that, and not just being like fast time, you know.
So you had made another band after, you know, like that first
one. Oh yeah, okay. So UTD, So UTD, like, as soon as that band, the Sewer Ghost, started playing shows, I was like, damn, I goofed. I should probably get some bands going, or get a band going, or whatever. So I started like just jamming with my friends and shit. And I had one friend, his name was Will. I met him, I think I was in like fifth grade. And like, me and him played music together a whole bunch, and we'd like record stuff on GarageBand at his house or whatever, just like random weird shit. We made all kinds of weird music. I was like super into ska too. Like, I was into like punk and ska and oi and shit. And like, but I was also, you know, like I said early on, I was exposed to so much fucking music. Like, I made a lot of weird kinds of music as a little kid, you know? Sure. So I started this band, my first like real band, never like settled on a name. We had a few different names, which are all extremely fucking embarrassing. And I played guitar. It was like a three piece. We mostly just did covers. And that, like, you know, we'd cover like Operation Ivy and Minor Threat and Bad Brains and just, you know, all your classic, like, entry level fucking punk shit, or like, you know, early 80s hardcore and stuff like that. So that was like a huge, that was like where I started playing shows, that band. And we recorded some shit. We had like, we'd record stuff on GarageBand and fucking put it up on MySpace, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Remember the era. How were you finding, it's like, you know, so you're young. How are you finding things like Bad Brains, Minor Threat, Operation Ivy? Like, where are you encountering, you know, like the kind of the fruits of your research, so to speak?
Yeah. It was kind of coming at me from all angles, you know, when I try and like pinpoint it and think about it, like, I can kind of remember like the first like 10 or 15 CDs like I ever had, and like kind of look at that progression. So my sister had a certain kind of stuff coming at me, which was more of, like you said, like the anarcho-punk of the 90s. And she was also telling me that a lot of the stuff I liked wasn't cool, which like kind of gave me another perspective on the whole thing. My dad was showing me the 70s stuff. And then like the kids I was hanging out with were probably listening to more like shit like NoFX and MXPX and like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Fat Records, Hellcat sound.
Sure. Yeah, I kind of never loved that shit. There were like certain things, like, you know, I really like Bad Religion and, you know, like certain bands of that style that I fuck with, but I never really fell for the NoFX thing super hard. But like that kind of stuff was, and, you know, there was all the shit on the radio too. If you think about that time period, like punk was like pop. You know,
dude, I mean, it was the most popular type of music at the time almost.
Yeah. I mean, it was up there, you know what I mean? It was on the radio. There's songs with fucking fast beats on the radio. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Which was kind of like another level of exposure to it. But also, so that band I started, the first one that started playing shows, the kid who played bass in that band, his name's Garen. He's still a good friend of mine, but he like gave me a stack of CDs that like, he was like, this is hardcore music. You should check this out. He's like, punk is cool. But it was funny because the shit he gave me like Answer That and Stay Fashionable by AFI. He gave me fucking a Leftover Crack CD.
Okay.
He gave me a CD. So I'm like, you know, I still kind of didn't even have a very clear picture. I knew the Black Flag bars from my sister, like, sure, you know, having it like drawn on a shirt or some shit. So that I started listening to Black Flag like really young, and they were like my favorite band for fucking ever. Like I got the bars tattoo when I was like 14.
Damn, little boy out there with the ink. Okay.
Little baby boy. It's so funny because it's like really bad, because I was like, you know, it was in like Dylan's bedroom, and his girlfriend at the time, like, she had bought a fucking tattoo machine. She's a great tattooer now, but at the time, you know, we were just kids, and fucking our other friend's band was recording their demo like in his bedroom, and she was like giving us tattoos and shit. Yeah. And everyone was like fucking with me, and I'm like, yo, fuck you, like, fuck off. We're all laughing and stuff, and so it's all like shaky. She's like, you need to stay still. And I give a fucking 14-year-old a tattoo, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Is it still a good?
I mean, it's there. It's still there. It looks like shit.
But you know, like that fits the that, a 14-year-old getting a tattoo of Black Flag bars should look bad. So
right. So I knew the fucking bars. So me and my friends, we'd go to like FYE all the time. And like, yo, another thing, I had this other friend, Evan, who played drums in that band, UTD, and he was really into like techno and shit. So, you know, we'd go to FYE and we'd basically just like, remember when you could scan the shit and like listen?
Yeah,
headphones.
Definitely.
We would do that for fucking hours. We'd just go like chill at FYE and like check out like techno and punk and like metal and shit like that. But I remember, so I knew the Black Flag bars were like something cool. And I was like at FYE and I was like going through the pop rock section where you'd find the punk shit. Like you'd find Dead Kennedys and Black Flag and like Ramones or whatever. And I fucking, they had Wasted Again, that Black Flag CD.
Oh, yes, of course.
I tried to buy it and they wouldn't sell it to me. So I just, because it had the parental advisory. So I just stole it. And right. Then that was like my favorite fucking thing in the world. Like that CD was like everything to me. And then one day I was like in the car with my family in the back seat of this minivan, like with my fucking Walkman listening to it. And my dad like heard me sing the Wasted lyrics, like I was so wasted. And I must have been like 11 or something like that. Yeah. And he was like, what the fuck is he listening to? And like, you know, like took it away and shit. Cause as much as my dad was into like punk, he kind of checked out on the hardcore thing.
Sure.
Really like feeling it once it entered that space.
Gotcha. Okay. He was a purist of his time. I see.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he just thought hardcore was a little like low life shit.
Kind of. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
Made me like it more.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, like you kind of discover Black Flag. You're kind of all these people around you that are helping you source kind of this catalog of punk music and things of that nature. You're playing music with people. What's like your first like call it like established band?
Well, I had a band. So after that first band, because we just had like a group of friends that kind of just would like, you know, we'd start a band and then two of us would get in an argument and we'd go start a different band and you know what I mean?
Sure.
So right after that one, I had a band called 7-8-9, like the number 7, the word 8, and the number 9. Okay. And we played like a handful of shows and like actually like recorded like a decent sounding demo. We were kind of like a pop punk band, I almost want to say. It was like fast and melodic, but you know, we did the same shit where we'd cover Minor Threat and G.G. Allin and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
And we played a few shows.
And so what was the first show you played?
The first show. Well, that first band played some shows too, but nothing like, you know, like we played like backyards or whatever, or like right. Barbecues and stuff like that. And there was this spot in Woodstock called the Colony Cafe, and we would book shows there. And eventually it, you know, the, there was like a fucking like riot one night of like a bunch of little kids, and like the owner fucking called the cops, and she locked us all out, and all of our equipment was like still in there and stuff. So we were like fucking throwing shit at the fucking door and like slamming on the door. And when she opened it to like tell us she was calling the cops, like a bunch of kids like rushed in and fucking her down and shit. It was fucking, but that band 789, like I don't remember what our first show was or anything. We played a show at like Club Crannel, which was anybody from the, you know, Hudson Valley area knows what I'm talking about. It was like the third venue in the Chance complex. So you had the Chance, the Loft, and then there was Club Crannel. And it was dope. That was the only show I did there. And that was actually with that band, the Munchkin Punchers, that Donnie from Forest was in.
Yep.
So yeah, so I played with them there, and then that band 789 played one show in Newburgh with them and with fucking Alex's band Big Ben, or maybe they're the Usual Suspects by then. There was this other band, Run Johnny Run, that played. And that was kind of like the first time I like met a lot of people who are like still my friends today, like in the Hudson Valley scene and shit.
I see. So like you're playing, you know, it sounds like you're getting around with your, like, you know, 789 and like acts before that. Had you like gone to anything? Like had you gone to like a show that was like substantial at this point, or was it predominantly just local stuff?
Well, we had some substantial stuff come through locally, but mostly it was just like little, like we don't know what the fuck we're doing punk shows. But then like me and Jack met, I think I was like 12 years old, maybe, when me and Jack became friends. And I like started going to this kind of like alternative, like hippie school, cause I was like getting in trouble and shit. And he was there, and we became friends and that was just for like the second half of the year. So then there was like the summer went by, and then when we came back, me and him like kind of started going to shows together. We like went to see Guar, we went to see like Municipal Waste.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That kind of shit, you know what I mean? Like I think the first show we ever went to together, it was at the Chance, and it was Guar and Municipal Waste and the Red Cord and this band Left in Ruins, who was like a Poughkeepsie, you know.
This is such an interesting lineup. Like the Guar Municipal Waste thing, both being from Richmond and also just being like goofy, like makes sense. But then the Red Cord being on it is a real curveball.
Yeah, that shit fucked my brain at the time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was so sick. Yeah, like that was a big like kind of pivotal year for us as far as the music goes too, because it evolved, because Jack had more of a background in like metal. Like over that summer I had like played a bunch of punk shows, and he went to see Sounds of the Underground. So like when we came back together, I was showing all this punk shit, he's showing me all this metal shit, and it kind of led us towards hardcore eventually. I think I see.
And you guys are how old at this point?
Like still like 12, 13, maybe.
Okay.
What even? Yeah, maybe 12. I don't even know. 13,
what,
maybe.
What was kind of like your cresting into like high school? You know, like you'd start going to this alternative school and everything. Did you like go to something like that for high school as well? Or did you kind of go back towards something a little more normal?
So going into high school, I really wanted to go back to like a normal school. So I went to the Woodstock Day School for elementary school. And then I went to Onteora for seventh grade, which was like the public school for Woodstock. It's like a little bit deeper, like into the sticks. But I got in so much trouble, and like I was fucking selling drugs and shit. And I got caught, and then I started like, me and this other kid got caught, and then he didn't like me anymore. You know what I mean? And so I started getting bullied like real bad, just getting like the shit beat out of me, fucking like choked out with jump ropes in gym class and shit like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, my sister had already gone to this like alternative school for a little while when she was younger, like many years prior. So I went there for like a couple years, or like a year and a half, basically. So it was like the rest of seventh grade and then eighth grade. And going into ninth grade, I wanted to go back to school and I took my placement test and all that shit. So you didn't get any credits for going to this hippie school. Over that summer, my like best friend died. That kid, Will, who I was talking about, who like I started playing music with real early.
Yeah.
And that kind of just sent me into a fucked up ass place. So I went back to school and it was just like 10 times worse than the first time. So I just went back to the fucking hippie school for the rest of that year. And it didn't really get, I didn't really get better. It got real fucking grimy, you know? For a little while. And then I kind of got sick of it. I got like fed up. I felt like all my friends were pieces of shit. And I fucking just like hated the person I was being and stuff. So I actually, and I had a couple friends who went to a local Catholic school. So I actually like asked my parents if they'd like enroll me in this Catholic school. And that's where I ended up going to high school.
Okay. So, and like, and you're young and you're experiencing like the kind of this like time of like, it sounds like extreme turmoil. You know, you had a friend that died, like, you know, like you're involved in like, you know, like drugs and things of that nature. I mean, like, you know, good on you for being that kind of mature while being immature to be like, I need to go to someplace else away from this.
Yeah. Well, yo, I'll tell you, I think it was like hardcore that did that for me because, like it basically gave me people to like look up to that, like, didn't think drugs were cool.
Interesting. Who would these people be?
Well, just in the music, like, okay. So in that time period, I'm like discovering like Minor Threat and SSD Control and like all these bands who are like singing about being sober. And like, I'm watching fucking, you know, the American Hardcore documentary. Yep. And I'm fucking watching videos on YouTube and interviews with Ian McKay and all this shit. And like, and I'm like, yo, cause this is the music I love. And when I see that stuff, I'm like, this is the thing that like really makes me feel stuff.
Right.
And like, it's not that it made me not like, I still am a fucking huge pothead. Like I haven't drank in like a number of years. Cause that like got a little out of control in my early 20s. But, like, you know, it's not like I'm straight edge, but just having this thought in my head that like, it's cool to be straight edge. Like kind of, it gave me this other perspective that the other kids I was hanging out with just didn't have. Like they were like, you're a fucking pussy if you like don't do drugs, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I was like, I don't agree, basically. Yeah. And it set me apart from them in a big way, you know?
Sure. No, and that makes sense where it's like you're like, all right, I'm not necessarily trying to go like full bore into like being a straight edge person, but it's like there are people whose perspective is away from like even like the name of that culture or like assigning a name to it is like that stuff doesn't necessarily have to be cool. Meanwhile, you're around people who are basically like, you're not cool unless you're doing this stuff.
Right.
So you steer away from it. You take yourself out of the equation and you start going to this Catholic school.
Yeah, essentially I stopped hanging out with a lot of those kids before I started going to the Catholic school. Cause like, I just started going to shows and like, and motherfuckers are fucked up all the time. They get a little too lazy to go to shows at a certain point, you know?
Sure.
I was just so excited that I was just going. I didn't care. I wasn't like,
what gigs are you going to at this time?
So in, I would say what year are we at now? I don't even know.
I would say if it's what we're talking about, we're probably in like the mid-2000s, like mid to late-ish.
Right. So, yeah. So I'd say like 2008. So 2008, that this spot called the Montrose Basement started doing shows. I think they did some shows prior, but like in 2008, they had this like one fucking huge show. I mean, it was funny because it was mostly local bands, and then like that band Ludax played. And they were like super beloved by the Hudson Valley. Like that, like Ludax speaks to Hudson Valley kids for some reason. Like it really touches their fucking souls.
Very interesting.
I think it's the dude's lyrics.
Sure, I could see that. I could see that for sure.
But so
they're very of the time in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, they're unique though. You know, they got a little bit of that clergy thing, but like it's way more stripped down. And I love that band. I think they're cool as fuck. But so there was this show, and like I had gone to a few, you know, like I'd been going to like punk shows, whatever, the shit in Woodstock. There was a skate park in Accord, New York that did like a battle of the bands, and like our bands would like play that shit. I'm trying to think, like, just like random ass shit, like the Loft, like I'd go to shows at the Loft, you know. And then Montrose Basement started, so I probably went to like mostly shows at the Loft and the Chance up until that point, and the Colony Cafe until that fucking one night where the lady like made a big stink about us moshing or whatever. Yeah, and then so then it was like I was just at Montrose like all the time. I was like like every single show they had, I was like at for like 2008 and like most of 2009, and then by 2010 like UTD had like broken up, and they were like the band. So basically I just went with UTD everywhere.
I see. Okay.
So they played, I just went to, but they were a pretty local band, you know, they didn't tour or nothing. It was just like New York. Like there was like one time we went to Philly, you know, there was like New Jersey maybe, but it was pretty much just like New York.
I see. So, yeah. So you're going with them. Are you now, you've broken away from a different friend group prior to this. Are you playing music with anybody at this point in time, or had you kind of like gone away from that because you had walked away from that other friend group?
Me and Jack, once we started playing music together, we never stopped.
Gotcha.
So it was like, you know, my friend Will passes away. The other kids I was sort of in bands with are a little, you know, kind of, they were older than me too. I was always like the youngest.
Right.
So like, you know, they're getting a little old. They're not so into like being the punk band anymore. They're fucking trying to hang with girls and like, you know, go to parties and shit.
Yeah.
And I was still like trying to go to band practice, of course. You know,
understandable.
So I think once I split off from those kids and me and Jack started playing music together, it was just that that's just been what it's been ever since. There was like a short period of time where I had this other band I started called After Hours. I started this band when I was 16. So in like 2009, we started writing the music, put our demo out in 2010, and then Jack wasn't in that band, but he ended up joining it like that year.
I see.
Like
what
our second.
What was After Hours like?
Like real chaotic, Converge, I guess most people would compare it to, but like not though. Like it was really weird ass music. Like, so my friend hit me up and he was like, I want to start a band like Dillinger Escape Plan.
Okay.
And I was 16 years old and like basically knew how to play hardcore and like a few Black Dahlia Murder riffs, you know? So I'm just kind of taking the idea of like, oh, Dillinger Escape Plan, that's that band with like fucking insane time signatures and shit, and just like trying to write things in like crazy time signatures. But it's basically like hardcore and like weird time signatures.
I see. Okay. I got it. But yeah,
and
I mean, like
Dylan's in that band.
He's singing that band too. I see. So yeah, I mean, and that type of style was also pretty popular during the mid to late 2000s, maybe like more like mid, but like I could see how that kind of thing would be like an influence. Like that makes sense.
It all made sense. You know what I mean? At the time, I think that band, if I actually, you know, it probably sounded more like A Life Once Lost than like anything.
Sure. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm familiar. I got it. So you guys do that. and like you're 16, 17, you know, like how, what was the experience with After Hours? Like, you know, like were people into it? Were you playing out a lot, or was it kind of like still sort of cutting your teeth in the area?
We played mad shows locally. Like it was the same thing. I never, so like, I didn't start like playing shows outside of New York really, like until Age of Apocalypse, because I didn't really need to. I like had every, you know, like growing up, like the Hudson Valley scene is weird now because over the past 10 years, like since 2011 or 12, our area has gotten so gentrified that like, there's no like hardcore, like doesn't fit into the Hudson Valley anymore as far as like venues go or like the like economy goes. Like there's just nowhere for it. Nobody's at like the kids are asking for it. But as far as like, you know, there's the clubs and shit, like nobody's fucking asking for it.
Yeah, when the place kind of goes up and gets gentrified, this is something I've explained to people before. It's like you lose resources. There's no like we're cheap to practice. There's nowhere to like play because like the venues are too nice. There's not like a shitty enough place to like, you know, like let moshing. People like mosh and like stage dive and shit. It's like people like ask, they're like, how come no bands come out of Manhattan anymore? It's like, yeah, because you can't be a young person in Manhattan. You know, it's like you can't like
you can't
afford. Right. That's why all the bands come out of Brooklyn, because it's cheaper to live there by comparison. But it's like, you know, people wonder why there's not like bands from like these like large metropolis propers. And it's like because like young people that want to create can't afford to live there, bro.
Yeah. And it's crazy because it's getting to the point where the Hudson Valley is essentially just like, you know, it's like part of the larger metropolitan area at this point, as far right. as like the population who lives there goes. But you know, when we were kids, it was like, this shit was a fucking shithole. You know, it was like ghost towns, ghettos, like it was nasty, nasty shit. But it's exactly what you said. It provided all these resources for us to just not even have to leave. You know what I mean? It was we're doing shows all the fucking time. I mean, so After Hours was cool because we played house parties. We played like, we just pull up. We heard there was a fucking party going on. It's 9 o'clock at night already. I'm calling the guys like, yo, can you make it to this house tonight? There's a fucking rager. Like we're going to play. And we do that shit. And like, that was most of the shows we played, and it was sick. Like we had a good local following and our shows were fucking dope. But once it started, like once we tried to start being like a little bit more legit of a band, it totally fucking fell apart. And like when we tried to stop playing shows at houses and start playing shows in venues, you know,
how did it fall apart?
It was just, you know, it was just, we were just young and we were just fucking had different ideas of what we wanted to do and what people wanted to do with their lives. And we were kind of going in different directions. And, you know, we weren't necessarily agreeing on what to do, like where to go with the music and all that kind of shit. So it just was like, it sort of fizzled out. We had like three last shows kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like we kept it going. We do like one show a year basically for like a few years up until I want to say like 2015 or something.
Okay. So for a while after this point, because like this is like what, 2009, 2010, like how long is After Hours around, like let's say like actively?
So we recorded a record in 2012 that was kind of like the thing that put the nail in the coffin.
Right.
Like started the process, you know, fucking. And so around that time, because shit was just getting a little weird, Jack, who also played guitar, and our drummer, Mike, the two of them kind of went, like started another band with, our friend Paul, who, you know, I'm in like some bands with now and like Jackson, some bands with and shit. And, but that band was called Hellkeeper, and that was like a black metal, kind of like black and roll sort of band.
Very and sick. All right.
Did that band for like a number of years. I ended up joining in 2014. And like we did that band for a while, like super hard But we would mostly just play like Northern Jersey and Brooklyn and like the Hudson Valley, and a little bit of Albany, because Paul's from Albany. So we would like play up there a bit. And that was cool. We didn't really get to, it wasn't necessarily a sound that I would have chosen. I just was sort of like, damn, all my guys went and did this other band. I'm going to go join that band because I like want to play music with them. There's some black metal and shit I fuck with, but like, you know, it's not necessarily my ideal like music to play, but it was fun for a while until it kind of stopped being fun. Cause it was like St. Vitus on Wednesdays with fucking, you know, who knows what doom band from Nowheresville, Indiana, or whatever the fuck, you know.
Sounds
what I mean?
About right.
I know. People at St. Vitus on weeknights, yeah, like once a month. And it's like, all right, this fucking sucks and I'm depressed, yeah, you know? And so, and I was spending a lot of my time and energy, like doing that band really hard for like a really long time. But you know, that was kind of, when that got depressing is when I was like, all right, you know, this band's not going on tour. And I always wanted to go on tour with my bands, but like there was just other people who like kind of didn't want to do that, like in the bands. And I was so devoted to just like, all right, well, you guys are my fucking bros and this is the band. So, you know, we're sticking together and like, you know, I'm going to keep trying to make it happen, but I'm not going to fucking, you know, leave you guys in the dust and do it without you or whatever, you know what sure. I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of suffered that for a long time. And it, by the time Hellkeeper was sort of, you know, hitting that wall, I was like, fuck it. And so I just started traveling and I was probably like 21 maybe at this point. And this is when like me and Jack are like, we would just do like, just started traveling like super fucking hard to shows, like, you know, like Vane, like we're really close with Vane. And like, so we would just, they toured so hard and we were like, yo, let's just like go follow Vane on tour for like a fucking week or something like that. And right. So like we would do shit like that. And like, you know, we would just go to as many fucking shows as possible. And then that, you know, eventually kind of we started meeting a lot more people. I think that's probably plays into why AOA has had more success than like our prior bands, is like, we just kind of started traveling a lot more, you know?
Yeah. No, you know, more people, you're getting more, you get more connections, you shake more hands, you know, like that's like, that is, a strangely enough, a big part of it, you know, in general. So this time period, like away from traveling to get gigs and stuff like that, you're at a school, you know, kind of like, what are you doing like away from school at this point?
So when I graduated high school, I started dating this girl like the summer I graduated high school, and she was going to SVA, School of Visual Arts in Manhattan. She was like living in Brooklyn. So I would like travel back and forth. I was just, cause you know, like I said earlier, kind of, you know, I shouldn't understate it really. Like the family business played a really massive role in my life this whole time. I worked there. I didn't like have other jobs. I like worked for my parents, you know sure. what I mean?
At yeah.
a restaurant. I did all kinds of shit. So basically it was like, I was back and forth between those two obligations, girlfriend in the city, restaurant up here. And it was sort of, I just kind of lived in the car, you know, going yeah, up and down 87, like fucking three times a week for like, and that probably lasted like 3 years and before I got like super burnt out on it. And you know, my girlfriend at the time, she was kind of, getting burnt out on the city herself. And so I moved out when I was 20 and we like moved in together in Bearsville upstate. And then eventually like we were there for a little while, but that was a fucking weird ass situation. So we got out of there and moved to Kingston, and I've just kind of been in Kingston ever since then. But yeah, it was just like working for the restaurant. And we also had a business up in Albany. So it was like, we had a restaurant in Woodstock and a restaurant in Albany, and up in Albany, there was like, because we did a lot of catering. We do like weddings and shit. Mm-hmm. So I would go up to Albany and prepare all the shit. Like, and then I'd deliver stuff. I'd do a lot of deliveries. Right. So most of my time was just spent kind of, you know, living for the restaurant and then spending every spare moment I had, like being with my girlfriend or whatever. But I would also like, during that time, I was going to like a ton of shows in the city, which was awesome. That was like, that was a cool era because it was this moment where it was like any given night, I could walk out my fucking door and find a show to go to somewhere, some kind of metal or rock or punk or whatever, you know?
What kind of stuff, what kind of gigs are you going to during this time period? Like who were you seeing either regularly or like what were you seeking out?
A band. So I used to go see two bands like as frequently as they'd come to New York, which was Every Time I Die and Converge. Makes sense. In the city were fucking insane. So, you know, those were probably two of my favorite bands during that time period. But, you know, I'd go to whatever, like I fucking, you know, if Incendiary's playing in the city or in Newburgh or whatever, they used to play in Newburgh a lot. I'd go to that shit or like I was going to see Living Laser, like constantly the fucking place, like was going on at this time, going to shows.
I remember
the pizza place. I remember fucking seeing you there. There was this other spot called the Warehouse in Newburgh. There was a ton of shows that would happen there and I'd go to shows there. I'd go see Colony all the fucking time. Like, you know, like this sort of time period, there was a lot of shows going on, but you know, local, like it was local shit. You know what I mean? It was like, I was going to shows in fucking in Newburgh, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Brooklyn, Manhattan. That was kind of it. But it was like, there was always some cool shit going on.
Sure. Definitely.
So like Webster Hall. Yeah. There'd be shows at Webster Hall. You got the big concerts there, right? I would go there to see like big metal bands. Like I remember seeing like At the Gates there in this time period, seeing like fucking, you know, there was a show, I think it was like a New Year's fucking day show. It was like early January. I think it was like Code Orange Kids, like right around when fucking I Am King came out.
Like 2015 ish. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the, you know, that shit was fucking, was popping at Webster Hall. And then in Brooklyn, there was this spot called the Morgan and there was like more like hardcore shows there. And I'd go to that shit. And then, you know, there'd be fucking just like the local hardcore, you know, I'd be seeing like Dissolve or like fucking, you know, like Recycled Earth. Yo.
Oh yeah. Like I remember Recycled Earth. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of love in the Hudson Valley too for that band East Beast, like the pre-Vane band.
Pre-Vane band, yep.
So, you know, we were all fucking with that band super hard and like Living Laser, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I was going to see Living Laser like as often as possible as I think like, you know, a lot of us from the area were, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's like the...
So that's kind of the idea, you know?
Yeah, for those uninitiated, it's like Living Laser, we've talked about it over here before, was the basically Mind Force.
It was Mind Force with a different bass player and they were like a more punk sound. They were less like metal. Like Mind Force started going to like a more metal, like crossover thrash area. But yeah, similar shit. Jay's voice for sure.
So when does Hellkeeper kind of like stop? During this time period?
So Hellkeeper, I think like we never like really officially broke up, but we just kind of stopped playing shows. Probably like we kept at it. Like we probably kept playing shows into like the beginning of 2019, maybe.
Okay. So all through kind of the same time period, you guys are playing, you know, at least off and on.
Yeah. But it got to the point where it'd be like very, very little, you know, months would go by where we don't even like speak to each other. And then we like have a show or whatever. And then we had this other band like right before Age of Apocalypse, like after Hellkeeper called Public Burning. So me and Jack had like, we had started this band called Money Spell with a couple of kids. And it just like, we had studio time booked and these fucking kids, we'd show up to practice and like, they'd have forgotten the songs and shit. And it's like, yo, we're going in the studio in like 2 days. Christ. So I quit the band. But we just pulled some psycho shit. So like I quit the band and then Jack was like, yeah, fuck this. I quit too. Fuck you guys. We wrote an EP in like a night, basically. Okay. We wrote this Public Burning EP and then we went and recorded it 2 days later. And the drummer of Hellkeeper played drums on that. And it was just like, you know, it was like C standard, like real fucking, just kind of like brutal, like short songs. Like imagine somewhere in between like 100 Demons and like Blood Has Been Shed, but in like minute and a half to like 2 minute long songs.
Short, heavy. Got it. Okay.
Short, heavy, brutal. Yeah. Kind of like late 90s, early 2000s vibes. And we did that band for a bit and that shit was sick. We just played local shit with that band, but it was like the energy was chaotic. It was like real fucked up. Like our shows weren't like huge. We weren't playing like big hardcore shows or anything. We were playing local shows that I mostly booked and we'd like stack them just with local bands. But we always got like pretty fucking sicko reactions, which was awesome.
Hell yeah.
But the energy around that band was just a little too chaotic and, it kind of degraded. Things started moving fast. And so one of the things that kind of kept me back early on, like I was saying about fucking, you know, touring and stuff was the drummer who I was very loyal and devoted to, who was in all these bands. He was a little bit more committed to like starting a family and that kind of thing, which is totally cool.
Sure.
You know, just like our ideas for what we want to do with our lives didn't really align, you know? So shit started happening with Public Burning. And so I like, he would kind of make it real difficult to like plan stuff, you know? So I kicked him out eventually with the blessing of the rest of the band. It wasn't just a me thing, but I did the dirty deed. And I think that kind of soured the whole thing. And then that was just,
sometimes you kind of like somebody that's like a part of the framework. It's like hard to kind of replace them and it feel the same. I get it.
Right. Exactly. And I think that like a couple of the other guys in that band were feeling the same way and it just sort of stopped happening. But so that like, and we like started AOA like right after that, like while we were doing shows with that band. And then we just kind of like, we're like, all right, fuck it. Well, we got AOA. So let's just do this, you know?
Sure. So what year does Age of Apocalypse start?
We put the demo out in 2018. I think we played our first show in November 2018.
Okay. So you start in 2018. And you know, how did it come together and what was the intention?
So Dylan was going through some hard shit. He was staying at Jack's house because Dylan lives in Brooklyn and he like works on movie sets and shit down in the city. And Jack was still living in Kingston at this time, where Dylan's dad also was living at the time. So his dad had he had a stroke, and he was kind of struggling. So Dylan was coming up a lot to take care of him. And while he was coming up, he would stay at Jack's house, and Jack could kind of just tell that he was going through a lot and he was having a really hard time and like needed some kind of help. He needed some kind of therapy, some kind of outlet for these things that I think, you know, Jack was just sort of observing him having no one to talk to about this kind of shit, you know? Right. So that was the intention, was to give Dylan an outlet for what he was suffering through. And I didn't even know about it. So Jack kind of kept it secret. You know, Dylan was at his house. He was like, yo, I'm just going to like write a few songs for you to like sing on, so you can kind of like get some of this shit out of your system. And he recorded them. And then he hit me up and was like, yo, I like made these songs. Can we come record the vocals at your house? And I was like, yeah, sure. So they came over and then, and like, I kind of helped Dylan arrange the lyrics and stuff like that. And then we were just like a unit from, it was like the three of us at first, and we were like assembling, and you know, in also intention wise, I imagine you might be asking about like the sound of the vocals and stuff too. I didn't know that's what we were doing, you know. Basically we had that other band that Dylan sang in, and he always screamed in that band. He'd have a couple little parts where he'd like sing a little thing here and there, but it was a lot more like Jacob Bannon-y, like singing kind of like long notes over shit.
Right.
So we didn't know what he was capable of, you know? And I was like, so what are you going to do? And he was like, I don't know, but I'm not going to like scream, I don't think. And I was like, all right, whatever. And so he started laying it down, and it was like, cool. And we were like, yeah, we like what you're going for. And I was just sort of pushing him to like, just sort of do it a little louder and a little harder and use a little bit more, you know, abdominal muscle on the whole shit. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, he like belted some shit out while we were like recording Spreading War. I think that was like the first song we recorded. It was definitely the first song that Jack wrote. And like, it was like, oh shit, that's sick. Let's just keep doing that. Like, that's cool. You sound good. It sounds natural for you. Let's just like keep moving in this direction and like see what happens or whatever. Right. So that's where the sound came from. But yeah, I mean, it was like, we didn't have any plans. Like, it was literally just, you know, maybe we'll play a show. When we asked Will, our drummer, to join the band, it was like, yeah, we might play a show. You know, we just like want to like put a band together or whatever. And then, you know, people just fucking actually liked it, you know?
And I feel like that happens a lot where, you know, if a lot of bands that like the intention behind it was just like, oh, let's just try it out, are the ones that end up being the ones that take off. And sometimes the ones that have so much intention behind them are the ones that just never really get off the ground for whatever reason. It's just funny how that works out.
Well, we definitely weren't overthinking it. And I think sometimes overthinking can really paralyze you. You know,
Absolutely. You
get too many options. You're thinking too much about a thing, and then you've taken so long to decide, you realize that you haven't actually acted. But with AOA, it's just been action and positive attitudes the whole time. You know, it's just been like, yeah, I mean, that sounds fun. Let's do it. And if there's some shit we like don't want to do, it's like, it's never like, there's never somebody in the band. Like, I'd say I'm probably the worst out of anybody. It's like, you sure you don't want to play this show kind of thing, you know, or like, you sure you can't do it, can't make it work. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, it's really never a thing where anybody's like sour or butthurt about it. And I think that's another thing that causes a lot of like grief and causes people not to get off the ground, is like, just disagreeing, you know, about what you want to do. And we're always very just on the same page, you know?
So the band starts, you play your first show at the end of November, and kind of like, what was the trajectory like from there? Like, you know, like did people take to it like immediately, or, you know, like, was there like a little bit of a warm up? Like, you know, kind of like what was 2019 like, so to speak?
So 2019, we played like a few shows. Like, we didn't play a ton of shows before COVID fucking put everything to a halt. Like,
right.
I think we had played like 10 shows in total. Most of them were like pretty local. We like did some shit we played like a couple shows in the city. You know, what was cool and like different about AOA was like, it was the first band that I had that like was getting like asked to play the shows that I wanted to go to.
Sure.
Which was like really sick. And like that started happening in 2019, where it was like, yo, do you guys want to play this show? Like, all these fucking bands you love are on it. And it's like, yeah, fucking finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a lot of 2019, and it was fun. And like, you know, we weren't getting like the biggest reactions in the world. I think people were still like kind of getting used to us, you know?
Sure.
It was like kind of confusing music for a lot of people at first, but then they felt like they had to keep listening to it maybe, or something like that.
I think what's interesting too about Age of Apocalypse is it's like the music itself is, if you attach a different vocal over it, it's like pretty easy to like access. Like,
yeah,
heavier hardcore. I think for whatever reason, people, because of the Clean singing, like automatically are like, oh, weird band. And it's like, well, actually, it's like, if you think about the music, it's pretty Troy, you know, and like, you know, like pretty,
yeah, for sure.
You know, it's, and like, and I think people just like automatically assume it's like, oh, it's crazy stuff going on here. When it's like, no, I mean, like it's hardcore, the man singing over it. You don't have to make turn right. it into something that it isn't, you know?
I mean, it's some New York shit. I think that like, it's like we do a style of hardcore that's like a very strange like niche of New York hardcore that most people aren't really familiar
with. I can agree with you on that, sure.
Like Sheer Terror, Deep Tracks, you know what I mean? Fucking, yep. You know, like it is some Life of Agony shit, but like we definitely got some fucking EGation there too, you know? And like it's a lot of like Harley Flanagan shit too, you know? Yes. And like, like there's a lot of singing and a lot of fucking metal riffing like in New York hardcore that absolutely. I think gets overlooked because people write it off as metal shit. And like, it's like, yo, I mean, I guess, but it's like, we're talking about fucking bands that like are so seminal in like a lot of the sounds that are permeating hardcore today, but maybe just not in the vocals, you know?
Precisely. Like, it's like, there's a lot of bands that are, take influence from Best Wishes, but don't have that type of vocal over it, you know?
Right. Exactly. And I mean, definitely Troy core shit too. I mean, I think that's like pretty obvious. But you know, we like Connecticut, Massachusetts, like this whole kind of, like area, like, I don't know, listen to Blood for Blood. Like there's melody in those fucking vocals, you know what I mean? I don't know, like, so we're in, everybody thinks we're like named after like a fucking the Marvel comic, which is fine. I mean, I guess, you know, like that should, it's not a great Marvel, you know, storyline, but it's fine. It helps us, you know, we're the only other thing that comes up when you Google it, so that's kind of sick. But
that's good.
Like we got the name from the band Blood Has Been Shed. They have a song called Age of Apocalypse, and like that shit. So like anybody who doesn't know Blood Has Been Shed, if you like real heavy weird shit with like singing on it, like, yo, fucking check that shit out, because it's sick. And like that was, so it's Howard Jones from Killswitch Engage. It's like his fucking brutal ass metalcore band that he was in like before Killswitch. And like that to me, when I remember, I was probably like, I mean, I might have been like 13, 14 when like I started kind of discovering like death metal or like even deathcore and shit, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Whitechapel was really popular and fucking Cowboy and shit. And I was like listening to that shit one day and kind of like, you know, getting familiar with it, finding out what that was all about. And you know, there's definitely some of that shit I fuck with still to this day. But my friend Ryan, he played bass in After Hours, and he's just sort of like an older brother, kind of like music guru to me. Yo, I was listening to that shit one day, and he was like, yo, don't fucking listen to that shit. Check this out. And he showed me Blood Has Been Shed, and I like fucking holy shit, changed my whole brain.
Latched on, hell yeah.
It just changed like the thought patterns, like the way that my brain works. I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, so I was probably like the first band I really fucked with that was like heavy with like clean singing, because I didn't really fuck with clean singing too hard over like heavy music for a decent chunk of time. Cause I had like something I left out when we were talking earlier about like early days. So like when Kingston was like a ghost town, when I was a kid and getting into punk and shit, there was like other kids that like little fucking packs of miscreants fucking running around the streets. And there was like emo kids, you know, and we kind of had this silly little fucking like little kid beef with the emo kids. We were like, you know, we're the punk kids, you're the emo kids. If we see you, we're going to fight or whatever. So I would just shit on like anything with like clean singing on it. But, you know, Blood Has Been Shed kind of opened my mind to that. And then like Dillinger Escape Plan kind of opened my mind to that too. And then by the time I was in high school, I was like fucking with, you know, all kinds of weird metalcore with singing and shit, you know?
Sure. And, you know, I get it. When I was in high school, any band that was like considered emo, I was like whack, lame. Like, right. Like I didn't listen to AFI for years because I was like, dude's voice is too high. I don't like that stuff. Like, you know, what have you. And I'm sure
it's kind of like my mind when I found out AFI was a hardcore band when I was like, however old, like when my friend gave me a stack of CDs and he was like, yo, I was like, is this the same AFI? He's like, yeah, like fucking same thing. But you know, and then there would be those bands that I would like give a pass on it. Right. Like there was AFI and My Chemical Romance. And I remember like fucking sitting at this girl's house and we're like watching TV and the Black Parade comes on. She's like, oh, I love this song. She's like, but you probably hate it because it's emo. And I remember being like, nah, I heard they like the Misfits. So they're so cool. They get a
Yeah, I don't know. No doubt. So
that shit's funny.
Age of Apocalypse, you know, like you play like, you know, like a little bit here and there throughout 2019, people are like, are into it, but they're still kind of trying to figure you guys out. And then, you know, very early 2020, you know, like lockdown happens and, you know, what did you do in kind of like your life away from music, but also kind of like what turned into the game plan for you guys, you know, musically during that time period as well?
Well, so my life went to shit. I mean, in like, I don't know, in like a good and bad way, I guess. But like, I was like engaged to this girl and we split up like a few days before COVID like hit. At that same time, we received an eviction notice because the landlords decided to sell the building. So like going straight into COVID, I basically like lost my girl and my home and had to like kind of find a new place to live and just sort of like rebuild myself as like a new man.
Kind of a ground zero, like, a little bit.
Yeah. It was a little crazy. I kind of had to like discover like who I was again, like outside of like service to her, like, you know, and that was kind of like a whole experience. And I moved in with some kids who probably wasn't the best idea for me to move in with them. And like, it was good at first, but it got fucked up. And like, but now, I mean, I'm gonna, you know, which in by 2021, I moved out of living with those kids and, you know, I live with, my girlfriend and a couple of dudes now fucking, and it's great. You know what I mean? Sure. But at that time period, it wasn't so good. You know, I think the lockdown and shit really fucked with a lot of people's mental health. Like it was kind of like a bad cocktail of, you know, four different people going through different versions of shit, you know?
Sure.
With AOA, and I basically just skateboarded the whole time. I was like, I need something. I need to get hurt. I need to fall down. I need to fucking feel pain and like hear loud noises and shit. So I just like skated the whole fucking time and like just cooked a lot and like got a veggie garden going and all that kind of peaceful shit. But like AOA, we had just put out The Way, in 2019. So we like recorded that. It's the 4-song EP. So when you look at The Way on Spotify, the first 4 songs are The Way, and then the last 3 songs are the demo.
Right.
Like different recordings. It's cool because it kind of sounds like one recording, but it's different. It was like 2 different releases. So we had just put that out and we played like 1 show in January of 2020. And it was like, shit was feeling like good. Like things were like really starting to amp up a little bit. So I think when COVID, we were like not about to fucking chill, you know? So we got, we hit up our friend Josh who runs that label Fuzz, and we asked him if he'd be down to put The Way out. And so we did, that's why it ended up becoming one thing. He was like, yeah, well, let's do it on 12 inch and let's put the demo and the EP together and just make it like a 7-track record.
Right.
Like that's fucking perfect. So we did that. And so that kind of kept us floating for a little while. And then it was like right around that time when that kind of became an idea, like when that like came out, that like Carter hit us up about doing, the song for the One Scene Unity comp. And so we were just right. So we had the song on that release. The Balance. Yeah. And that was the first song we like wrote in quarantine, you know? And I would drive up to Jack's house in Western Massachusetts and just like stay there for, you know, however many days, and we would just fucking grind shit out. And so we did The Balance, and it hit real hard, and people really fucked with it.
People did like that song a lot. Yep.
Yeah. And you know, I think, so when I went up there to record, to like do that song, and when we did the vocals and everything, it was like right as shit was like popping off, like real fucking hard with like the protests and everything, that year, like over that summer, you know? It was like, it was real fresh. Like if anyone listens to that song and ever wonders what it's about, like it was literally just like pure, like it was just us expressing our feelings about all that shit, like as like raw and just like honestly as we possibly could while keeping it rhyming or whatever the fuck. So like we did The Balance, and then we wanted to do a split. Like we had the idea like, yo, we should fucking do a split, and we didn't know who to do it with. But all that time we were like writing and recording other songs, like demoing them out, which would all end up becoming Grim Wisdom. So we like wrote and demoed out Grim Wisdom beginning to end, plus a couple other songs. And then finally it was like, yo, let's just fucking do this shit with Pain of Truth. And it was like, yeah, duh, we should, like that was the right option the whole time, you know what I mean? It was the first idea we had, and then it was like we weren't sure if it was going to work out or whatever, and then so we were like thinking about other bands we could do it with, and then I think one day Alex was just like, yo, let's just do it with Pain of Truth. And we're like, yeah, okay, definitely perfect option. So we recorded those songs. It's funny because that came out before the album, but we actually wrote and recorded those songs after the album.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were like the songs that came out of us, like right when we finished demoing out the whole album. And then, so I was spending a lot of time, like I would just go up to Jack's and just sleep on his fucking couch for like a week. And we would just wake up first thing in the fucking morning, get in the fucking in the booth, just start cranking shit out, doing guitars and vocals. And we would just get after it super hard. And, it, you know, Dylan would come up and we had like a real intense kind of writing process for the lyrics and stuff. He'd have some ideas of like phrases, kind of general ideas for topics. And he'd have little stream of consciousness shit. And then I'd go and I would find the key words in there. And then we'd like break it down and then come up with key phrases and then sort of like form the lyrics to the songs. But it was very like
style. That's very interesting.
Yeah. It was like me and him like real deep in it. And then we would start laying them down. And then it was like me and Jack in the booth while he's laying them down, kind of like, you know, we're so funny to like, I can't imagine how fucking ridiculous it probably sounded like if we had a camera in there or some shit, like the three of us singing the fucking melodies at each other. Like so fucking funny. But yeah, so it was a pretty intense process. And we spent a lot of time on it. So, and then when we finished demoing it out, we like sent it to Taylor and he would send us notes back. And then like, we'd kind of rework things a little bit here and there. And then when it came time to actually record that album, we were supposed to go out to the pit to do it. But it was like, I think it was right when the fucking Delta, it was like the first like variant hit, like the Delta variant hit.
Yeah.
Like fucking week. It like decimated California. So we stayed and we ended up just recording the whole thing ourselves at Jack's house. And then Taylor like mixed and mastered it. And you know, I don't want to understate his role in it. He played a huge role. Like that dude gave us a ton of fucking awesome advice and like really like helped us craft that record into what it was, you know, what
of course,
it is.
Of course. I mean, and like, So hold on. When was this recorded? When did you record it at Jack's house?
So we demoed it out in 2020.
Okay.
And then when did that shit come out? 2022, January 2022.
Came out 2022, yes.
Yeah, so we demoed it out in 2020 and then recorded it for real in January 2021 because we went up to Buffalo to do the fucking drums at GCR. And then remember we came down and I just was at Jack's for like 2 or 3 weeks straight after that.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, you guys, you know, put this together, super communal effort and everything. Like, it's not just like you guys are doing the music and Dylan's coming in and doing, you know, his thing with the vocals and what have you. When kind of lockdown rescinded halfway through that year, did you guys like hit the ground running on playing, or did you, you know, kind of wait? Like, what was sort of the lay of the land for you there?
So, so in my mind, it was like there was the Dead City shows, and that was like, oh, shows are coming back. And then there was the Madball show. Yes. And I went to that, and it was like, okay, shows are back, like it's fucking back. And that was in April, I want to say. And then we played our first show back in July 3rd, 2021. We played our first show back. It was at Underground Arts with Mind Force, Year of the Knife, Queensway,
right in Philadelphia. Yes,
fucking all due respect.
Yep, that's correct. That's right.
And I'm forgetting. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this and I'm forgetting.
Hey, you remembered most of it. It's all good.
And that was like, that show was a huge game changer for us. We had played in Philly one other time in November of 2019. We played with Leeway at Voltage Lounge. And it was like on a Wednesday and there was like nobody there and it was fucking.
Oh, really, I've seen videos of this gig. I know when
you played about with our fucking jackets on. Cause it was like mad cold in there and shit. Yeah. So I think just as like a thank you for playing that fucking show and like coming out from far away on a fucking weekday or whatever, like, they just kind of hooked it up with that show. And it was sick, dude. It kind of set a precedent for like the rest of, you know, moving forward for the rest of that year. And I think, so we did that. I'm trying to think of, and we did one other show in September in the Hudson Valley. We did like another show with Mind Force at the Loft. And then we did like the tour with Pain of Truth, and it just kind of like kept rolling, and we've just kind of been doing shit. You know, we don't completely do the incendiary business model where we do like a little bit of like weekends and like touring and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we definitely do less, because we're, you know, just kind of a little bit older. You know, we're not necessarily old, but you know, we're all kind of like, I'm 29 and I'm the youngest, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you got stuff going on, and like, honestly, in 2023, you can do this model and it like works,
right?
You know, like if you've got kind of enough of either you got the tracks to kind of pull anywhere, or you shake enough hands, you know, and like, you know, meet the right people, you can do it. I think about y'all and Incendiary kind of in the same operation, but y'all play a little bit more than they do.
Right. It's definitely the same kind of approach. And, you know, like Mind Force does a really similar thing.
They do. Yep.
And, you know, so we're just kind of like, we're doing, it's just, it's right now, it's kind of led to this thing where we're just kind of like doing the best that we can. We're like, we're a little bit picky about what we play because we can't play that much.
Yeah, so it's like, sure,
if we can't play everything, you know, let's, what we can play, let's make sure it's stuff that like we're really, really stoked about. And it's been cool. Like we've been getting like good, you know, we get pretty decent offers and like shit is fun. And like more than anything, it's just like really special to get to fucking travel with your friends, you know,
absolutely,
and like fucking play guitar, you know, and so people can kick each other in the fucking neck or whatever.
Ain't nothing better, you know? So yeah. I feel you there. So, you know, and it's like people, you know, people like that last record a lot. That was one of my, you know, like favorite records of the year. And I know it was a lot of course, absolutely. I personally have like a special place in my heart for like stuff that sounds of that nature.
Sure.
You know, stuff that, you know, stuff that comes from the mold of like, you know, like it's like there's the dash of Life of Agony, but it's like, a little bit of the Only Living Witness model, you know, even like as deep as like the Sam Black Church, you know, of the world, you know, things that kind of mix up the melody with the heaviness, you know, I like.
We got some straight Sam Black Church rips.
Straight up. And I know that.
You'll find them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear them. Yeah, I hear them for sure. And it's like, and that's the thing is for maybe a younger person listening or a person maybe not in the know, it's like, if you like bands of that nature, if you're into like, you know, like Singing Man over hard mosh part, you know, look up Sam Black Church because it's something, sure, you know, kind of like within that realm. Cast Iron Hike. Awesome, yeah. They rule hard. You know, so it, and like, and I think people took to it. People, you know, took to that record and like, you know, like Closed Casket, obviously reputable label, you know, putting out, you know, good heavy stuff and everything. And I feel like it's like, in a way you guys have carved out your space, you know, due to your unique sound, that it's like, you know, there are probably a lot of people when you play a festival or you play like a larger lineup or just even a regular show that are like, oh, not a lot of bands sound like this band. I'm showing up to see this, you know?
Right. I think that's cool. We definitely stick out a bit like a sore thumb on a lot of shows, which is totally fine with me. It's like, there's kind of like a thing where it's like the first time we played any given kid, it's like, it's a little bit like, maybe this is the break. Maybe this is where we take a break. But then it's like the second time they see us, it's like, fucking the battle is on, because it's like, I think it just takes a minute to get used to. It's a little jarring. You're not used to that kind of thing in a hardcore show necessarily. You're not expecting it. I think if you don't know us, and then it's like at a fest, like you're saying, like, you know, there's a bunch of kids there who are just there for like XYZ band, maybe don't know the rest of the bands or whatever. And then they are exposed to them. And a lot of the shit they're going to be exposed to, like, hardcore is very diverse right now, but there's not a ton of melodic singing, you know? So it's like, it might be the only one that day that they hear with that.
I mean, you could probably count the bands that do that on one and a half hands right now. If I had to guess. So it's like, it's a rare, you know, it's a rare thing for sure. And it's like, you know what, that makes sense what you're talking about, how there might be a kid who like sees you that day and they're like, oh, I've never really listened to this band. And I was like, and they're like, but well, maybe they're new. And they're like, what is this? Because everything else they've heard is maybe, albeit hardcore's diverse right now, it's maybe more akin to one another. So then they see y'all and they're like, I mean, if anything, I think it's like less of a detriment and more of a positive, because they're like, I got to figure out what this is.
I like that. I like challenging.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah.
That's always been kind of like part of my like mission as a musician in a lot of ways, like that band After Hours and shit. Like, you know, we were making very challenging music, you know? And I think that AOA is far less challenging than that, but it's still different and it's still kind of unique and it's a little different flavor or whatever. And, you know, we all have very like, we kind of come together on certain things, but we all fucking are freaks with our musical tastes. Like our tastes are so all over the place. You know, and I think that kind of comes through with maybe not necessarily the songwriting, but like just in our like stees, like our individual stees, like as we kind of play, you know, Joe really loves like fucking grunge and like post-hardcore, like 90s New York, fucking, you know, Into Another, Quicksand, all that kind of shit. And we all love that, but I think that's kind of his like thing. And that definitely comes through on his bass playing. And like, you know, Will's like a death metal drummer, you know, and that definitely comes through on his fucking playing. And like, you know, I definitely fucking came up more just with like fast hardcore, and that's sort of my presence that I sort of bring. So I think, you know, I think that we're just like kind of an eclectic mix of fucking weirdos that like make a strange style of music that can be jarring at first, but maybe next time you hear it, you know, it hits and you can kind of get the full effect of it, you know, and sure, fucking jump off something.
Sure. And that leads us to kind of to now and the future, you know, what's next for you guys that you can speak on?
Well, you know, I think we're writing some music.
Hell yeah.
I don't think we have any shows that aren't announced. If you want to see us, look at our Instagram and check it out. We kind of, you know, just sort of play it by ear. We like let shit kind of come to us and we're like, all right, well, what will we do? What won't we do? We don't really have any huge plans right now. We're kind of taking it easy because we want to write some new music, you know?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I got some other bands I'm playing in. I should probably mention.
Yeah. Drop play bass. What are we playing with now?
So I play bass in a band called Flowers for Burial. And I also play bass in a band called Brain Burn. Brain Burn is a little bit more of like a studio project. Flowers for Burial, we got a bunch of shows coming up. We got one. I mean, this will definitely come out way after this, or I imagine.
Oh, no, brother. This is coming out tomorrow.
Oh, sick. All right, perfect. Well, we got a show. So then tomorrow, from tomorrow on Sunday in Catskill, New York.
Okay.
And then we got a little weekend. We're playing like Boston, Brooklyn, Troy.
What's this band like? What's the style?
Like, it's like grindy power violence with like fucking pretty sick mosh parts.
Flowers for Burial. It was like, okay.
Flowers for Burial. Yeah. It was a band that like kind of already existed. They'd played a couple shows and then wasn't working out with their bass player. So I joined and we just recorded a record that's going to be coming out, sometime this spring, probably. And then we got another band that I don't want to speak on too much, but I definitely, it's called Quiet, and we're going to try and start playing shows soon that I'm singing in.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Will this be a first time foray doing such?
No. So I used to sing in bands. So a couple bands I actually forgot to mention that were like in between like the 7-8-9 era and the After Hours era. Cause there was always a bazillion bands. I sang in a couple of bands when I was like in high school, but it's been a really, really long time. And it's a totally new thing for me. And like now doing it at this age with the experiences I have and shit, it's like, it's a totally new experience. And starting off doing it, I felt very like vulnerable and shit, but now I've, you know, it's become like really, really fun. We got like 4 songs done. We're going to try and like book our first show soon.
Very rocking, man. Very rocking. Well, you know, you got a lot going on out there, you know, and you're making a lot of music, and there's a lot of opportunities for people to come and see you and experience it and everything. Terry, I want to thank you very much for coming on, man.
Thank you, Ace. This has been awesome. Really appreciate it.
Great to have you here. Everybody, you know, listen to Age of Apocalypse, listen to Flowers for Burial, check up on anything Terry is doing. If you want to support this podcast, again, subscribe at www.patreon.com/forum of passion. And until next time, stay safe.